Nadja was mollified by Taita's success and the message from Opepe. Any inkling he might have had of Taita's disloyalty was expunged. "I have that old rogue Opepe at the brink," Nadja gloated. "He is about to make even more concessions than he realizes, which was why I was so angry when he broke off the conference and went to his couch." He was so delighted with himself that he could not remain seated. He jumped up and paced the stone floor. "How is he, Magus? Did you give him any potion that might cloud his mind?"
"I sent a dose down his gullet that would have stunned a bull buffalo," Taita assured him.
Nadja crossed to his cosmetics chest and sprinkled perfume from a green glass vial into the cup of his hand and stroked it down the back of his neck. "I shall take full advantage." He started towards the door, then looked back over his shoulder. "Come with me," he ordered. "I might have use of your powers before I'm done with Opepe." Binding Opepe to the treaty was not the easy task that Nadja had suggested it would be. He showed no ill effects from either his wound or from the medication, and he was still ranting, shouting, and banging his clenched fist on the table long after the watchman on the temple walls had called the midnight hour. No compromise Nadja offered seemed enough for him, and at last even Taita was exhausted by his intransigence. Nadja adjourned the conference, and to the crowing of the roosters in the courtyard, staggered off to bed. The next day, when they met again at noon, Opepe was no more amenable to reason, and if anything, the negotiations were even more stormy. Taita used his best influences to calm him, but Opepe allowed himself to be wooed only very slowly, so that it was only on the fifth day that the scribes could begin to write down the terms of the treaty on the clay tablets, in both the hieratic script and in hieroglyphics, translated into Hyksosian and Egyptian. They laboured late into the night. Up to this time, Nadja had excluded Pharaoh Nefertiti from the conclave. He'd kept him occupied with trivial tasks, lessons with his tutors and practice at arms, meetings with ambassadors and delegations of merchants and priests, all of whom sought concessions or donations. In the end, Nefer had rebelled, so Nadja sent him out hawking and hunting with Opepe's younger sons. These outings were not the most amiable of events, and the first day had ended in a loud dispute over the bag, which had almost led to an exchange of blows. On the second day, at Taita's suggestion, Princess Mintaka joined the hawking party to act as peacemaker between the two factions. Even her elder brothers held her in considerable awe and deferred to her when, at other times, they might have drawn their weapons and rushed to wreak havoc on the Egyptian party. In like manner, when Mintaka was riding beside him in his hunting chariot, Nefer's warlike instincts were lulled. He took little notice of the threatening, boastful behaviour of her loutish siblings and enjoyed her wit and erudition, to say nothing of her close physical presence. In the confined cockpit of the chariot they were often thrown together as they bounced over the rough ground in pursuit of the fleeing gazelle herds. Then Mintaka would grab and hold him, even when the immediate danger was past. When Nefer returned to the temple after the first outing, he sent for Taita, ostensibly to describe the day's sport to him, but he was vague and distracted. Even when Taita questioned him on the performance of his favourite falcon, Nefer showed no great enthusiasm. Until he suddenly remarked, dreamily, "Does it not amaze you, Taita, how soft and warm girls are?" By the morning of the sixth day, the scribes had completed their work, and the 50 tablets of the treaty were ready to be ratified. Now Nadja sent for Pharaoh to take part in the proceedings. Likewise, all Apepe's offspring, including Mintaka, were to be present at the ceremony. Once again the courtyard of the temple was filled with a glittering congregation of royalty and nobility, as in stentorian tones the herald royal began to read out the text of the treaty. Immediately, Nefer was absorbed by what it contained. He and Mintaka had discussed it in detail during the days they'd spent together, and exchanged significant glances whenever they thought they detected a flaw or an oversight in the terms. However, these were few. and Nefer was certain that he detected Taita's shadowy influence in many areas of the long document. At last it was time to affix the seals. To a series of blasts on the ram's horns, Nefer pressed his cartouche onto the damp clay, and Apepi did the same. It annoyed Nefer to see that the Hyksosian king had usurped the pharaonic prerogative by adopting the sacred cartouche. While Naja watched, with an enigmatic expression behind his heavy makeup, the new co-rulers of the two kingdoms embraced. Apepi folded Nefer's slim form in his bear-like embrace, and the congregation exploded in loud shouts of "Bach Herr! Bach Herr!" Men rattled their weapons against their shields or hammered the butts of their spears and lances on the stone flags. Nefer found himself almost overcome by Apepi's powerful bodily odours. One of the Egyptian mores that the Hyksos had not adopted was their concept of personal hygiene. Nefer consoled himself with the thought that if he found the odour repugnant, then Naja was in for a shock when the king bestowed his affection upon him. Gently he eased himself out of the arms of his co-pharaoh, but Apepi beamed down on him in avuncular fashion and placed one hairy paw on his shoulder. Then he turned to face the crowded courtyard.
"Citizens of this mighty land, which is once again united, I pledge you my duty and my patriotic love. In token of these, I offer the hand of my daughter, Princess Mintaka, in marriage to the pharaoh Nefer-Seti, who is my co-ruler of this very Egypt. Pharaoh Nefer-Seti, who shares with me the double crown of the upper and lower kingdoms, and who shall be my son, and whose sons shall be my grandsons."
There was a long moment of utter stillness in the courtyard as the assembly came to terms with this startling announcement. Then they burst out in even more enthusiastic cries of approval, while the drumming of weapons and the stamp of armoured sandals became deafening. Pharaoh Nefer-Seti had an expression on his face that in any lesser mortal would have been described as an idiotic grin. He was gazing across the courtyard at Mintaka. She was frozen with one hand covering her mouth as though to stop herself shrieking or squealing, and her eyes were wide open with astonishment as she gazed at her father. Slowly a dark blush suffused her face, and shyly she turned her eyes to meet Nefer's. The two gazed at each other as if no other person was in the crowded courtyard. Taita watched from the foot of Pharaoh's throne. He realized that Apepi's timing of the announcement had been masterly. Now there was no possible way in which anybody, Naja, Trok, or any other, could stand in the way of the marriage. Taita stood close to Naja's throne. Under his makeup, the regent was plainly in a state of deep consternation, especially aware of his own predicament. If Nefer married the princess, he was beyond Naja's reach. He saw the double crown slipping from his grasp. Naja must have sensed Taita's eyes upon him, for he glanced in his direction. For a moment only, Taita looked into his soul, and it was as though he had looked into a dry well filled with the live cobras for which the regent was named. Then Naja veiled his fierce yellow eyes, smiled coolly, and nodded in agreement and approval. But Taita knew that he was thinking furiously. However, these thoughts were so swift and complex that even he could not follow them. Taita turned his head and sought out the burly figure of Lord Trok in the Hyksosian ranks opposite. Unlike the regent, Trok was making no attempt to disguise his feelings. He was in a black rage. His beard seemed to bristle, and his face was swollen with dark blood. He opened his mouth as if to shout an insult or a protest, and closed it, and placed one hand on the hilt of his sword, his knuckles glazed white with the pressure of his grip, and briefly, Taita thought that he was about to draw its blade and rush across the courtyard to Nefer's slim figure. With a huge effort, he regained control of himself, smoothed down his beard, then turned abruptly and pushed his way out of the courtyard. The commotion was such that almost no one noticed him go. Only Apepe watched him with a cynical smile. As Trok disappeared between the tall granite Hathor pillars, Apepe dropped his hand from Nefer's shoulder and crossed to Naja's throne. He lifted the regent easily off his cushions and embraced him with even more vigour than he had Pharaoh. His lips were pressed to Naja's ear when he whispered softly, "No more Egyptian tricks now, my sweet-smelling flower, or I shall ram them as far up your arse as my arm can reach." He dropped Naja back on his cushions, then took the throne that had been placed alongside for him. Naja blanched and held a linen pad soaked in perfume to his nose while he gathered his wits. Wave after wave of applause swept over the courtyard. As it died away, Apepe slammed his huge paws on the arms of his throne to encourage them to fresh efforts, and the cheering began all over again. He was enjoying himself hugely, and he kept them at it until they were almost exhausted. With the Deshret crown of Lower Egypt on his head, his was the dominant figure. Beside him, Nefer, even under the authority of the tall Hedget crown, was a mere stripling. At last, after a final burst of applause, Naja rose to his feet and held up both arms. A grateful silence at last descended. "Let the Holy Virgin come forward." Led out in procession by her acolytes from behind the carved screen of the chancel, the high priestess of the temple advanced to the double throne. Before her, two priestesses carried the Peshent crowns of the double kingdom. While the temple choir sang praises to the goddess, the venerable old woman removed the single crowns from the heads of the co-rulers and replaced them with the double crowns, signifying the reunification of Egypt. Then she pronounced her quavering blessing on the two pharaohs and the new land, and retired into the depths of the temple. There was a short pause of indecision, for this was the first time in the long history of Egypt that a ceremony of reunification had been held, and there were no established protocols to follow. Adroitly, Naja seized his opportunity. Once again he rose and stepped in front of Apepe. "On this auspicious and joyous day, we rejoice not only in the joining of our two kingdoms, but also in the betrothal of Pharaoh Nefer-Seti and the beautiful Princess Mintaka. Therefore, be it known throughout the two kingdoms that the marriage will take place in this temple on the day that Pharaoh Nefer-Seti celebrates his majority, or fulfills one of the conditions to ratify his claim to the crown, and rules in his own right, without a regent to protect and advise him." Apepe frowned, and Nefer made a small gesture of dismay, but it was too late. It had been announced in full session, and as regent, Naja spoke with the authority of both crowned heads. Unless Nefer captured his own godbird, or succeeded in running the Red Road, thereby ratifying his claim to the throne, Naja had effectively prevented the marriage taking place for a number of years. That was a masterly stroke, Taita thought bitterly. But he admired the political acumen behind it. Naja had averted disaster for himself by quick thinking and timely intervention. Now, while his opposition was off balance, he went even further. "On an equally happy note, I invite Pharaoh Apepe and Pharaoh Nefer-Seti to celebrate my own marriage to the princesses Heseret and Merikara. This joyous ceremony will take place 10 days from now, on the first day of the festival of Isis Ascending, at the Temple of Isis in the city of Thebes." "So, in 10 days' time, Lord Naja will be a member of the Tamosian royal family and will stand next in line of succession to Pharaoh Nefer-Seti," Taita thought grimly. "Now we know past all doubt who was the cobra in the nest of the royal falcon on the cliffs of Bir Masara.